Ohjelman tarjoaa Suomen kulttuuri- ja tiedeinstituutit Pariisissa, Lontoossa, Brysselissä ja Berliinissä.
Aistit is a 3-episode podcast series that reflects on art and its accessibility, both on a practical level and through a societal and philosophical approach. Each episode is based on the contemporary art program Aistit Coming to Our Senses, which is presented as part of the Helsinki Festival 2021. During each episode, we will discuss the accessibility of the contemporary art program with its curators and artists. The podcast series is based on Aistit Coming to Our Senses, an evolving program of exhibitions and performances taking place in 5 European cities between 2021 and 2022, produced by the Finnish Cultural and Academic Institutes in the Benelux, France, Germany and the UK and Ireland. The Helsinki chapter of Aistit Coming to Our Senses includes a group exhibition at Kunsthalle Helsinki, a public sound installation by Hans Rosenström and Kalle Nio from Kunsthalle Helsinki to the Temppeli Aukio Rocks, and performances by Kit Kokko at the Cultural Center Stoa. So welcome to the first episode of Aistit. So my name is Maija Karhunen and I'm sitting here at the studio with curators Satu Herrala and Hans Rosenström. Welcome.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, thank you, Maija. It's nice to be here with you too. And yeah, I'm looking forward to our discussion.
So maybe first we can introduce ourselves to our listeners. So I'm a freelance dancer and performer working in the Helsinki scene, but have worked in other countries as well. And about my relation to accessibility, I'm a physically disabled person myself, so I use a wheelchair to move around. And so I think my first experience with accessibility is very much related to the lived experience of a disabled person, but probably in many ways that I don't also realize myself, that I think that, yeah, it's probably also a lot of it is unconscious and that I don't even recognize when I'm dealing with accessibility or inaccessibility. Of course, in some moments it's very clear, but then, yeah, it also shapes your life and molds your life, and then, yeah, then your life becomes what it becomes. And yeah, so like when I think about moving in Helsinki, for example, I think maybe my mental map of the city is slightly different than of a person who walks, and then places where that I cannot access, I kind of then start to forget that they even exist. But then, yeah, I don't also, I have no idea what it's like to be a person who walks. So yeah, but then in addition to that, I didn't really have, like, I wasn't an advocate for accessibility or I wasn't an expert on it in a wider sense. But then last year I worked in a project in Culture for All, which works to support the art field and art organizations and art professionals in accessibility issues. And then, yeah, I worked in a project that focused on disabled and deaf artists and their equality in the professional art world. And then I learned a lot about accessibility myself. Like, I had to really learn it. And yeah, I think it's something that everyone can learn and should learn. I think it should be also not only the obligation of disabled people, for example, but on everybody's, like you have done with your exhibition now. Yeah, and I think it's a lot of very practical, often very technical things, even like you can have a checklist of things that if you do this, then your festival or exhibition or is accessible. But then, of course, it goes to all these structural levels as well with, like who has access to art education and funding and who is programmed and who is not and who is written about and who is not. And it's quite it's really vast, and I had to learn also from the point of view visually impaired people or deaf people, or they were completely new things to me as well until last year. Satu and Hans, you have curated the exhibition, but maybe there is a lot of other things that you want to tell. And also, since our topic is accessibility in arts, it would be cool to hear your own definition and relationship to the topic, since I guess it can mean quite different things to us, and what it has meant for you in your work so far.
Hi, my name is Hans Rosenström. I'm an artist. I'm one of the curators of this exhibition, Aistit Coming to Our Senses. And Aistit is Finnish, and it means senses. I work a lot with installations and often experience-based work that are comprehensive, that include presence, simply said. And in this Aistit Coming to Our Senses exhibition, I also have a role as a curator, and which is the first time for me to actually organize an exhibition and invite other artists to show their work. And I guess as an artist, I haven't really thought about accessibility so much, but from the organizational side, it became quite apparent that these questions started to arise. And it's a very, very interesting topic, and therefore I think this discussion is also going to be interesting.
Yeah, my name is Satu Herrala. I have a background as a dancer and choreographer. Recently, mostly I work as a curator, like in this project as well. It's been quite a journey so far. For 2.5 years, we've been working on this with Hans and with the 4 Finnish cultural institutes. And yeah, it's been for me also actually first time curating exhibitions. That my background is more in performing arts, and I've been curating festival programs and performances and artistic discursive programs, talk programs in different kind of spaces, discussions, but never before really like curating exhibitions. So it's new for me. And I think how I think about accessibility, I think this project, Aistit Coming to Our Senses, has really been like a big learning process, like starting from the topic of the senses and how to think about how to depart from that. And I think I have learned, and I am learning a lot about accessibility in this process. I think in general, like also Hans said, the role of a curator or organizer, like a kind of mediator between the artists and the public, or the artworks and the different publics, is there's a lot of responsibility both towards the artists but also towards the publics, and to thinking about who are we doing this or organizing these events or these programs for, and who, like, thinking about who could be interested in this, who could come here, like, what is this space, who can come to this space, and why they would come to this space, and thinking about the, like, kind of mediating the artworks and towards the audiences, thinking about, like, how to make it possible for people or from different backgrounds and different experiences to have a chance to experience art, and who can afford also to go there, or who feels safe in those spaces, or those kind of questions come really apparent when organizing and curating and being in that mediating role.
Like what Satu was mentioning, I think for us a big kind of starting point on a learning curve or beginning where we really felt that this is actually something we needed to take in consideration was when we invited Christine Sun Kim to this exhibition.
I want to start with something that you actually said, Hans, earlier today when we were thinking about accessibilities and thinking that whenever you collaborate with someone or you work with an artist, you always come into, you learn about someone else's perception and way of, like, experiencing the world and working and thinking and doing things. And then that kind of expands your scope of, like, how you understand the world also, like, in that meeting. And I think for us in this project to be keen to think about accessibility in a, like, to begin to be aware of different needs and different ways that we can make the program accessible came very much by through inviting Christina Sun Kim to participate in the exhibition in Berlin, and she's an artist, American artist working in Berlin. She's deaf and she works a lot with sound and different qualities of sound. And we invited her to show an artwork from 2015 that is, like, sound based, but it's called four. How do you say this?
4x4.
4x4, and it's a work that that you experience as kind of infrasound on your body. And at such a low frequency that she wanted to make hearing people and deaf people experience the work in the same way, a sound work. And so this work was part of the exhibition in Berlin. Unfortunately, we couldn't bring it to Helsinki because it would be really difficult to make this work in the in Kunsthalle for very technical reasons. But anyway, like, working with Christine was really for us the starting point. And she, in our first email, like, first communication, she said that she has one condition to participate in the exhibition, and that would be that if we make a video documentation, we will do sound captions, and that we will make it. Make the exhibition accessible through text, the video works. And then we, of course, promised her we would do that, but then we started to think about, like, okay, like, we should expand this these principles to other things that we are doing, and so that was kind of a starting point for us.
And then you applied and you received also a kind of funding to pay attention to this, and then you did a lot of other things also. I think you were had some education about it, and then also with other works you worked.
Yeah, well, we had an education like from Culture for All, so that all the four institutes and people who work in the project but also who work in the institutes were invited to participate in this education about accessibility, and also with the idea that these practices would become more and more part of the institute's like
routine.
Yes, routine in general, and not just in this particular project. And yes, so we decided, we had quite a few online events because of COVID, and so we had always text translation for the online events, and we made sure that we that the video works always like have texts there also if there is some like speaking, and the documentation videos, we did all of them with sound captions as well. So yeah, and then when in the curatorial process we have been thinking about possibilities to experience the artworks or the exhibitions through different senses, so that the works are not only like visual or auditive, but that there's with some works there's a possibility for touch also, or
to be touched.
Or to be touched. That was the plan until COVID. We had to, unfortunately, are not able to do that touch-based work to the audience, that the performers can touch each other, but unfortunately not audience. But that was the plan. Hopefully it will be possible to realize it later. It's a work called Treat by Anna-Maria Häkkinen and Maija Mustonen, where the work is based on healing touch, and they had a plan to invite the public one by one to be touched in this way, and they also work with scent. It's part of, like, they were interested how you can also touch with scent, but yeah. Now, because of COVID, they will have to just do it among each other, and then it becomes like a visual work, because the question is more than like how witnessing touch or seeing someone be touched can touch you, or how can that resonate in your own body when you are looking.
Ohjelman tarjoaa Suomen kulttuuri- ja tiedeinstituutit Pariisissa, Lontoossa, Brysselissä ja Berliinissä.
So how did it then feel? Did you have, like, Satu, you were talking a little bit about how the curator needs to kind of be this mediator between the artist and then also the public. So, for example, in the moment of making decisions about how do we make this work more accessible? Were there kind of, was it easy, or were there some kind of moments when you felt like somebody has to compromise too much,
Not in this exhibition, I think. I feel that all the artists we've worked with have been very forthcoming. In that we have been able to caption, for example, their videos, or Axel Antas, who is actually permits that his sculptures can be touched.
Mm.
And so then there are also other works that cannot be touched, but because they're too sensitive. But in general, I think that with a dialogue together with the artists, I think we managed to at least a little bit more make them accessible. But I can also see that it, for some works or some types of works, that it creates a real challenge of how to make them accessible.
Mm. Like, for example?
Well, even in a video piece that an artist has made, it can. That's a. If you imagine a highly visual video piece, and you would imagine that it has a soundtrack, there might be words or something. And. But it's thought as a whole, and if you then would add captions on it on the image, it creates a very different focus on looking at the image and mm-hmm. experiencing, because then the words that are written mm-hmm. also start to crave attention in a different way than the piece was maybe intended in the first place. And I guess these are questions that need to be thought about.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that's also why we sit here. But I see that I think it's a very each work needs to be thought of individually, how this could be made accessible. That there isn't like a rule of that everything needs to be described or something like this.
Mm. Yeah, I think it can be a really creative and interesting process also, like how to negotiate that what is suitable for this artwork and where are like kind of like the boundaries of that artwork and what are the ways of doing it. So I remember I guess these questions are always there with like any kind of interpretation of an artwork or translation of an artwork or now during the pandemic, like we have been like had to find like ways of transmitting the works online, for example, and thinking a lot about interpretation and translation. So I think like maybe as a arts community, we are getting more like better at that, but I hope, or more creative, or also I hope that this moment in time has also kind of widened our awareness about accessibility, because suddenly art or performance or art events are not accessible for anyone, like physically accessible. Mm-hmm. And then like how can we learn from this moment together?
Yeah, because I guess the reason why we even think about accessibility is like, I mean, for me, it's enough of a reason to just say that, yeah, like every person has a right to experience art as an audience and then also to aspire to be a professional artist. But I guess then you can also add to it other things, like accessibility benefits everyone or many people. This is often said, or that it enhances our creativity, or it gives new artistic possibilities, or it makes art more interesting or whatever. But I guess the kind of the basis for that, for the whole why we also sit here and why we think about this, is that art is a right. And then yeah, like the corona time has made it very difficult to access suddenly for so many people.
I think this, that it's actually like a constitutional right, of every person to have a possibility to experience art, like that this is something that I think it's so important to highlight that it is like a legal right, at least in this country.
I actually didn't know that it is.
Yeah, and then especially in publicly funded art organizations should be kind of, you should actually not need separate funding, like in an ideal world, like that actually. Would you have wanted to do even more something?
Of course.
In relation to this topic, or like, how would you want to continue to work?
Well, now I open my mouth, so now I feel like need to continue. I need to stress that this is the first time I'm part of organizing an exhibition, especially in this scale, as a curator. And I don't know if I will do this again as a curator. But I think in this exhibition now, with how we have been working, I'm quite satisfied how it seems that it's going. But of course, we could do things more or better. And in another podcast, we're going to talk about the sound installation. And for example, in this case, which is a public sound installation that happens outside, it's based on a song, and the song has texts. And there's a lot of questions that how could we make this more accessible? It's in English. You have to actually, or to be able to enjoy the song, you need to be a hearing person. But the work is not just the song, but the work is the whole situation of being in the space, looking at the changing sky, changing light in the sky, all the other people, the event, and the song is only like kind of, it's there to create an atmosphere, it's there to create this sort of baseline, but the work is not the song per se, but it's a whole situation that we try to trigger. But how, in this case, how to make this accessible for a person without a hearing, for example. I'm sure, like, there's probably many ways this could be done. And then it's a question of resources, like how much can, like, not just money resources, but also like personal resources. Like, since we are doing this with a quite small team and with a limited budget, but of course there would be ways to maybe have it as you know, that you could follow it with your mobile phone or something, and you could, with a GPS code, you could kind of have the sentences being said to you where, or that you could read them that at the same time in the same place, or like technology could allow us to do things much better or much more accessible. But then in the end, I guess it's a question about resources as well. It's about what can we actually do?
Yeah, you could have like an object that vibrates the sound. But then it's also, I mean, I haven't seen it. I will experience it this week. But yeah, I mean, it's already something that you do together with other people, and it's a situation. I'm sure there is a lot to experience, even though you cannot hear. And then, yeah, I think it's always like, people also often get very stressed with with this topic, and like they want to do everything, and then it's like, but then, yeah, it's like, it's always, I think there is not possible also to create something that is fully accessible to every human being. Like, it's always about making compromises and prioritizing one thing to another. And yeah, I mean, we are also doing podcast in English, and it opens it up to some people, but then I know that it also can exclude some people. So, I mean, we always live in this world of all these choices.
Yeah, maybe I can also say a few words about like this, like how to improve or like continue, or how to learn more about this topic. And yeah, I feel like it's really something to think about, like, just from the beginning on. And yeah, like, we also like apply to separate funding in the middle, kind of in the middle of a process, and we got funding from Vihori Foundation, which was great. But then it's also like how to build that into the budget already, like that would be something that, like, whenever you begin to think about the program, that thinking about accessibility is already built into like the starting, like, points and starting ideas for example, thinking about different spaces, like whether, like, what are the kind of spaces that are available, or kind of partnerships with different institutions. For example, now we are working with Kunsthalle, and the space is accessible, for example, with a wheelchair, but you have to use another door, like you have to use back door if you come with a wheelchair, or if you come with like a baby trolley or a tram and a pram. So it's like like a kind of, it feels like a compromise also, and like thinking about how would the program be if we begin with that. What I'm really like happy about is that all the artworks can be experienced for free. The exhibition has some like evening times when it's free. I think if I remember right, there are two Wednesday evenings when it's free. Otherwise, people have to pay to get in. So that's already like be a threshold for people to pay to come in. But the performance we are doing in Stoa is for free, and that's quite what I'm quite happy about. That because to do that, often performances at festivals cost money, and this like at Helsinki Festival, for example, unless they are like kind of urban events, like a kind of big, like a arts night or some kind of like public art. But when they happen in the theater, they usually cost, and so so we will see how that goes. Like, of course, I'm also curious if like people make the commitment, if they have to reserve the ticket, and if they come there, if they really then will come to the performance, and hopefully there are not so many places that hopefully they will be filled up. But I'm really happy about this thing. But I really think that it has, this project particularly has changed my like way of thinking about how to start planning, and how to start also like the curatorial process, because like I said that what was our process with Christine, for example, that then it's like, okay, now like I feel like she kind of opened a way for us to think about how this exhibition is made accessible for deaf audiences. And then like when you work with someone who, you know, like opens a kind of a possibility for a new audience through like opening your like own mind and thinking as a curator to think about something that maybe you didn't think beforehand. So then there's all like, how do you kind of create new relations also through that? And then you like transform your practice through those relations. And I think that's really interesting for me, like interesting way to look like this, to learn by doing. Of course, I hope that I had done all that learning already beforehand, and that I knew how to do it, and I was thinking about it all beforehand. But I'm grateful for the opportunity to.
But that's exactly the learning curve in a way, that you have to do things and then learning by doing.
Yeah, and learning by mistakes.
Learning by mistakes.
Yeah.
And also admit your mistakes a little bit. or realize that this, realize your mistakes.
Yeah, yeah.
Ohjelman tarjoaa Suomen kulttuuri- ja tiedeinstituutit Pariisissa, Lontoossa, Brysselissä ja Berliinissä.
So then, how as curators do you approach such questions as what do we consider and recognize professionalism in art? So who is a professional, and then what do we consider good art? And I say these questions because they are something that come up often when talking about the diversity of artists or accessibility, and then it's a bit like as if these two things were opposed to each other. And for example, I have never curated, but for example, when I have been working in a little bit in art critique, and then also in the funding system, have been reading a lot of applications, and then often comes the question that how do we recognize, for example, as a disabled person, you might not have the kind of a traditional pathway of becoming an artist, and also, for example, I haven't been able to study dance in the high level in Finland. At that time, it was like kind of categorically impossible. How do we then navigate this issue?
I just want to start by saying that not all professionally made art is good art. It's my first thought. But I guess also in how the contemporary art world operates, that there is also like the artwork is one thing, and then the whole art world is another thing, and a lot of artists need to be able to, or it benefits if they are able to participate in making the work, but also participate in being very active in the art world in order to make connections with other people, to network, to build their own opportunities. And if you are kind of shut off from that, it's already you're already one step aside from having the work shown. So that's also, like, in a way, that's also one thing that how would then, because this sort of world operates very much about with personal contacts and how you develop those and how you keep them alive. And so I guess that is also a question, is like how that world would become accessible.
I think also like how do you say, positive discrimination and quotas and like all the different tools that are there are really useful for the transition, I think. Yeah. And also to make immediately like accessible, for example, the art schools for for disabled artists, or that it's just, if there's a will, there's a way to do it. It shouldn't be that difficult, important step in the future development of art world and who can operate there.
Because of course it is sad but true, but there's a lot of good artworks that are not being showed also. So it's not that's also a very, very good question and a very difficult question to answer, because in for example, from my background coming from visual arts or contemporary art, and I studied, I think, 8 years in different schools, and it's most of my adult life I've been somehow living it, and I still wouldn't dare to define exactly what is good art or what is bad art. But when I look at things, I tend to think that I am quite sensitive to see things because of my history, that I've spent so much time looking at stuff, that I think I have a sensibility to read things, but also to be open of not understanding, that I can experience things that I don't understand, that I can find them valuable or meaningful, even if I can't explain them. And now this maybe sounds crude. It is crude to say this, but then when I, of course, this is only my subjective perspective. But if I look at things, I feel that some things are more interesting in the context of art, and some things are less interesting. And so, for example, now when we've been curating, we really tried to be really open, and I think we've looked at a lot of different things from people, from different artists from different continents, different backgrounds, different ages. And then of course, in this case, we really also had a topic and like a like we tried to create something that would work as one whole. But you also, of course, this is only subjective, but you tend to, some things you find more interesting than others. And I guess having spent so much time with art, it also, your taste becomes more selective.
Yeah, I've been thinking in my curatorial work and in my curatorial process in general, like here in this project, but also more generally, and when trying to share. During the past few years, I've been teaching a little bit about curating in performing arts and trying to kind of share the practice, or what is the practice. And then when thinking about, for example, questions or terms like diversity, and thinking about who are the artists whose work is very much presented in art institutions, and whose works are not, and how as a curator you kind of have to learn to kind of look away from kind of the center, or how is the process of
and this, I think you were very good at as well in our process, that you all the time also said that we have to look away.
Yeah, it's like it feels often that it's kind of like easy to see like who are the artists who are out there, and I think we do work here with many artists who are like really out there, I would say, like so maybe we didn't succeed that well in looking away, but I am thinking like how like time is very important, to give time, to really give time to that that process of like digging into like unfamiliar something, maybe like spaces or artists and contexts that are maybe unfamiliar to oneself, like how to also do it in a way that, if there's a possibility to do it with like through like relations, or if you have someone who can like sort of open or guide that to you, or like, because it can be also sometimes quite the feeling around this process of like curator looking for like like new artists to present, or can be kind of extractive, but how to do it in a how to form these relations of trust, for example, and kind of move in the speed of trust and in the process of looking elsewhere, for example, or thinking, trying to like think otherwise, because I think there is a lot in like art education or art institutions, and in the structures and in the institutional like art history also, there is a tendency to like repeat also build on the history that, but then there are like one particular, built on one particular history, but like what about the other histories and how can we, how do we find our ways to, like also unlearning what we know, and this process takes time, and yeah, like I said, it's like you need trust, and I really like what the activist and writer and like social and justice worker Adrienne Marie Brown how writes that move with the speed of trust. So like instead of like just like okay, like is there some artist here who I can like find interesting, but it's like it takes time to get to know someone's work also, and it's like maybe can be a commitment for years. But I don't know if I answered your question. I think I went a little bit other way. But I think there's something about this topic of the senses that I feel like is teaching me to pay attention to like how to perceive art and how to be sensitive, how to like develop these sensibilities in myself also, because I come also from a very particular like dance and performance background, and I feel like I have learned so much from Hans also to like about the sensibilities of like materials and how artists in more like contemporary art and like visual arts context what is the craft there, and how through senses and we like create a kind of co-presence with those artworks, and how to be like moved and affected by those experiences, even if you don't understand. And I think that's been quite a guiding force for us also in this process, that we have been drawn to some works because of their, and some artists because of their sensibilities and because of their like attention to like some details or some materials, or like kind of their commitment or their intimacy with what they work with, like the materials that they work with, for me it's been part of my learning process, and I guess I must confess also that even if like my practice as a curator, especially when I worked at Baltic Circle, has been quite like, let's say, like maybe politically oriented somehow, then I am as an audience, I'm more like in a way like a mystic, or that I'm really always looking for what I don't understand. Like I'm really drawn to the unknown somehow, or the unfamiliar, or like something that still moves me, or I feel some kind of connection to, but I don't know what it is, or I can't talk about it, or that it's just I feel connected somehow, but I don't know how, or I don't know why, or what. I'm drawn to this, like, so I think this has been also a possibility to get closer to those kind of works, that kind of like thinking about those sensibilities and the work.
So is it a question of how to make the mystic accessible without revealing it? Maybe.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And without fixing it, or without like trying to explain it, or by like letting it be what it is and be experienced in a way. Like, of course, it's the how can we make those artworks accessible and available for the public so that they can also have those experiences.
Yeah, definitely. I think there is a transition happening, and also it opened my eyes when I started to work a bit more with these issues there are so many people that it's not just my experience, but actually a lot of people work with this and think about this and have worked with this since the 90s and since the 70s. And yeah, it's like on the other hand, it takes time, but then sometimes I think change can happen also kind of quickly, and we are, because we are dealing with art, so we should be able to be creative.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
And yeah, to acknowledge the work of the generations before, it's so important. Thanks, Maija, for doing that. Like before, like when it's in a more like a mainstream or that, then it doesn't mean that it wasn't there, but like that work starts to pay off in a different way when it kind of enters more like mainstream thinking and
true
discourse. Yeah.
Thank you so much. I think we have to wrap up this episode. It was so nice to hear about your process and your thoughts on accessibility. And yes, we have two more podcast episodes coming up next week. It's with Hans, and also Kalle Neo will join us to talk about your sound installation. And then the last episode will be with Kit Kokko and Doris.
Exciting.
Great.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Maija.
Thank you, Maija.
So much for thank you coming to talk so with us.
Ohjelman tarjoaa Suomen kulttuuri- ja tiedeinstituutit Pariisissa, Lontoossa, Brysselissä ja Berliinissä.